Hard Place, a novel by R.A. Jacobson. Listener discretion is advised. Contains strong language, violence, and some adult situations. Chapter 41. Jacob finds Billy still. A blanket of sadness hung over the abandoned yard. The house, barn, and other outbuildings had a dark, forsaken look. Once, the lonely house had been painted light green and white, but now the paint had peeled, flaked off, revealing weathered gray boards. Some windows still held glass, reflecting the washed-out, colorless sky. The rest showed only dark, jagged shapes and gaping holes in the side of the carcass that had been a house, a home. Jacob looked at it for a minute, feeling a melancholy slide over him for a past that had been lost and forgotten. Jacob and Brian tramped through the knee-deep grass, leaving Clyde parked at the entrance. Jacob watched Brian's broad back. Something was wrong with him. Aside from losing Anne, he wasn't acting sad, which wasn't surprising. He healed quickly, but he was acting shifty. Brian was the least shifty guy Jacob knew. With Brian, what you saw was what you got, but something was up with him. There are tracks in the grass. Somebody's been here, and not too long ago. Go check the barn. See if anything looks out of place. I'll check the house, Jacob said. Okay, Brian turned and headed back to the barn. Yeah, Brian was definitely hiding something. Jacob had his suspicions. He had had them for some time. A few weeks ago, Billy had been evasive and hard to get a hold of, very unlike him. Doesn't look like anybody's been near the house for some time. Anything there? Nah, doesn't look like it. Brian looked sheepish. Jacob smiled. Okay, where did Billy keep his still?
Still?
What still? Brian looked at his feet and kicked at a tuft of grass. Come on, I knew he was making one. Where is it? Brian looked almost relieved. He couldn't keep a secret if his life depended on it.
Okay, yeah, it's back here. I told him he oughtn't do it.
But he said he could brew up shine as good or better than yours. Sides, he says you're getting long in the tooth. Somebody's got to step up. They walked to the sagging barn, a low building sided with raw wood, which turned dark gray over the years. The doors swung open easily on newly oiled hinges. Inside stood a large copper still, glinting warmly in the gloom. It was a work of true craftsmanship.
I knew he was up to something.
Long in the tooth! I ain't that old. Well, fuck me. That's one impressive still. Who built it for him?
Don't know.
Think he did it hisself.
Well, then I'm doubly impressed.
He worked a while as a welder at the mill. He knew what he was doing.
Did he run a batch? Was he going to use sugar?
Don't think so. He was looking to put you out of business. Who knows what he's going to add to the mash?
That's a fine still.
Somebody's coming. Clyde's voice sounded stressed in Jacob's head.
We better go greet our guests.
Guests?
Yeah, Clyde says we got company.
Oh yeah, I keep forgetting you and Clyde talk. Who is it?
Clyde, who's coming? Jacob asked.
Looked like suits, but they look different.
Different?
Yeah, brighter somehow. Don't know. It's weird, kinda.
Okay, we're coming out.
Leaving the barn, they pulled the door shut after themselves and walked across the grass-strewn yard. Just as they stepped up beside Clyde, a 1936 Ford coupe turned into the yard. Jacob smiled. He had loved this car ever since his uncle had one when he was just a teenager. The black car rolled to a stop, its suicide doors opened, and two men stepped out on long, thin legs. Both were freakishly tall, dressed in black suits with crisp white shirts and western ties, bringing to mind spiders leaving their lair. They were smiling big, toothy smiles under their broad-brimmed black fedoras.
"Gentlemen, 'tis a fine afternoon," Mr. June said, his pale hands at his sides.
"A fine afternoon," Mr. September agreed as he walked around the front of the 36 with a smooth, unsettling gait.
My name is Mr. June, and this is Mr. September.
Yeah, right. It sounds like real names. Brian stepped forward protectively.
Would you be Jacob? Mr. June said, ignoring Brian. According to our records, you were contracted in June of 1977, Mr. September continued.
What do you want from him?
Brian menaced, fists balled. Jacob placed his hand on Brian's arm and stepped past. Ah, oh, Jacob, it's so nice to make your acquaintance, Mr. June beamed. There seems to be an abnormality to your contract.
A what? An abnormality? What the hell is that?
Well, it seems it doesn't really exist, Mr. September said.
Well, that's bullshit. How can it not exist? Fuck, ask Clyde. He knows. He's part of it.
They can't hear me. If the judge sent me, they should be able to. There was a nervous edge to Clyde's voice.
Can you hear Clyde? Jacob asked.
Clyde? Mr. June turned to Mr. September, who opened a large leather-bound book and ran his fingers down the list. Yes, here it is. Clyde is contracted with you. I can see his name inked with yours, Jacob. And if he's contracted, I should be able to speak to him. That's odd. Very odd indeed.
What's all this about? What's the judge up to? Why did he kill my Anne?
Brian leaned in, face to face with Mr. June. Anne? She's not contracted. Mr. June smiled up at the giant, unperturbed. Yes, Brian, here's your contract, but it's odd as well. And no, Anne is not contracted. Oh, sorry, was not contracted. Mr. September's long, slender fingers pointed at an entry in his book.
Was? Yeah, was! She's gone! And why did the judge do that? What the fuck is he up to? Why did he kill my Anne?
Brian, please calm yourself. It's a sad thing, your loss of Anne. Had she been contracted, she may still be with us. Mr. June smiled, turning to Mr. September. Are we sure she wasn't contracted? She doesn't show up on the tree. There are a surprising number of contracts in this area. I see Jacob, Brian, Billy, Mary Lou, and a number of others going back many years. Mr. September looked up from his book, smiling. The tree here is quite full.
Mary Lou? What the fuck are you talking about? She's dead!
Jacob felt the world under him shift and tilt. He heard Clyde far off in his head. Jacob, I think you should listen. There's something going on here I don't understand.
Dead? Really?
Mr. September looked at his book. Here it is, Mary Lou's contract, but... But, Mr. June smiled. There's something not quite right here as well. Many contracts in this area have atypical exceptions and amendments, mostly to the Clause 666.
How many contracts are we talking about, Mr. September? Mr. June asked. Tell me what you're talking about!
Jacob screamed.
What about Mary Lou?
The pain he had carried for most of his life blazed in him. Mr. June smiled at Jacob. Well, we cannot talk about individual contracts. However, she is indeed contracted.
Contracted?
Jacob couldn't believe what was being said. It didn't make sense. How could it be? She died. He had killed her, him and Clyde.
So I didn't kill her? We didn't kill her?
Clyde said quietly with a tight excitement in his voice.
What the fuck? I went to her funeral. I saw her. She was dead,
Jacob insisted. Ignoring Jacob, Mr. September showed the open page to Mr. June. According to our files, Mary Lou's contract is still open. On the surface, it is mostly correct, with a couple amendments to 666, but there is a puzzling entanglement I have not seen before.
Fuck, 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 fuck!
Jacob roared.
Let's go back to the farm, Clyde said. Jacob stomped off, Brian following close behind.
Mary Lou is alive?
Really?
Jacob asked.
I don't know. I will try to find out for sure. But they would know, or at least they should,
Clyde said, sounding unsure.
What the fuck is going on? Why is everything so fucked up?
Jacob slid into Clyde and slammed the door.
I don't know, but these guys feel legit. The aunts asked me who I met at the crossroads. I thought I knew, but when they asked, I couldn't answer. Who is the judge? I thought I knew. I'm not so sure. Is he the devil or isn't he? I mean, who the fuck else could he be? Only he can give out contracts, right? Jacob said. Fuck it, I'm out of here.
Together, they pulled out of the farmyard and drove off, leaving the two men in suits smiling, the surrounding ground littered with dead flies.
Brian, you stay with Brandy and I tonight. Tomorrow, we'll go over to the judges and find out what the fuck is going on.
Kay, yeah, I don't think I can go home tonight. There's something so off about this. Those guys were definitely suits, but I've never seen suits that bright before, Clyde said.
What's the deal with all the flies? They were dropping like, well, flies,
Jacob asked.
Yeah, how come there's so many fucking flies? It's fucking creepy,
Brian said.
Suits don't wear a skin to be here, I mean on this plane. They suck the life force out of anything close to them. And they need a physical body, so they build one out of flies.
Flies. Well, that's just fucked up, Brian said. How about we stop off at Old Scratch for a pint? Maybe Brandy will have something to tell us. Clyde's engine growled as Jacob pushed hard on the accelerator.
Chapter 42, Awkward Silence. From the stage, John noticed the tall man the moment he walked in and leaned against the back wall. His long black hair combed back, dressed in a dark suit, a silver skull string tie, and a strange-eyed dog at his heels. John held his scarred beauty, felt it hum, felt it sing, and suddenly he felt a vision of fear. He dropped his pick, retrieved it, and when he looked up, the man and the dog had vanished. The host handed him a cable and he plugged in. He strummed the beaten strings, but no sound came from the system. At first, he looked around as if nothing untoward had occurred. He looked to the host, checking the board, its switches, dials, and cables. Slightly panicked, John took the second cable handed to him. Again, there was no sound. He looked at the amused faces, felt panic, a blackness flirting with the edges of his vision. He could not believe this was happening. This night was to be different. After a few minutes of awkward silence, the host looked at John with irritation and handed him his guitar. Reluctantly, John set down his beauty and took the instrument. He gave a perfunctory reading of his customary two songs, accepted the light pelting of indifferent applause, and left the stage. Without finishing a drink or listening to anyone's offerings, he pushed out of the club. He couldn't understand what had gone wrong, why his beautiful guitar had, at the moment of truth, gone mute and abandoned him. This was to be a triumph, and yet it was the worst ever. Head down, clutching the betrayer, he hustled down the street as the mocking night swallowed him.
Chapter 43. Matt asked Mary Lou out for coffee. An hour later, Matt stood in front of the closed doors of the Aturian Lounge. After shaking the doors in frustration, he peered in, face tight against the glass. Through a crack in the curtain, he could see the band on stage rehearsing. A woman walked through his line of sight. He was sure it was Mary Lou. He recognized her from the poster he had seen earlier. Another shake of the doors produced no result. So he walked around the alley to where he'd been the night before and found a spot to wait by the back door, hoping someone would come out. Alan had told him to talk to the singer before he exploded into black smoke. He still wasn't sure what he'd witnessed in the alley. It was a confused mess of overlapping images in his mind that did not fit any rationale. He had heard of spontaneous human combustion, but he'd thought it was just an urban myth. What had happened to Alan certainly wasn't a myth. It was as real as it got, but nowhere had he heard of great glaring eyes or massive fangs sprouting from the chest of a person on fire. Skinned bodies, friends bursting into flames, weird smiley dudes offering contracts with whom? The devil? How in the hell could any of this be real? Could the devil be real? He shook his head. Next I'll be thinking Santa Claus exists. No matter what he found out, nothing would bring Alan back. He realized he was far more tired than he thought. Far too tired to be standing in a back alley to question some singer who might or might not know something. Resolved to get some sleep, he decided he'd come back tomorrow. He flipped his collar up and turned to leave when the loading door clanged open and two men stepped out carrying guitar cases. Matt sank deeper into the shadows, watching the men. The door barely closed when another man stepped out, followed by the most stunning woman Matt had ever seen. She nearly glowed. He was tongue-tied for a minute. "Mary Lou?" he asked, stepping from the dark.
"What? Who are you?"
"Sorry to startle you. I need to talk to you. I'm a private investigator working on a case. I was hoping you could answer a few questions. Promise I'll be quick." "It's late. I'm tired. Perhaps another time."
"Hey, dude. She said no."
The young guitarist stepped forward. Matt ignored the yapping boy. "I promise to be quick. My partner started this inquiry before he died, and I'm trying to tie up his work."
"I'm tired."
"I'll be quick." Mary Lou sighed. "Are you the guy Jean spoke to backstage?"
"Yeah, that was me. Sorry, my name is Matt Pierce. I should introduce myself.
Your friend wasn't terribly helpful."
"No. Well, he's under a lot of strain these days."
"Two. Just two questions."
"Fine. You're tenacious, aren't you?"
"I guess I am. This case has become important to me. Have you ever spoken to Alan Cole?"
"Was that your partner?"
"Yes."
Yeah. He left me a message a couple of days ago. I never spoke to him, though."
"You said he died?"
Mary Lou turned to his companion. "It's okay, Daryl. I got this."
"You sure?"
"Yeah, it's fine. Night."
"Night."
The guitarist scowled at Matt and walked away.
"You were saying something about your partner."
"Yeah, he died badly."
"I'm sorry, badly?"
"Yeah, he was skinned, then burned."
"God, that's horrible. Wait, both?"
"I can't explain it myself.
Maybe I don't want to know."
"Alan was hired to find you by a man who calls himself the judge. Does that name ring any bells?"
No. I really should get home. I have a show tomorrow and I need my rest."
Mary Lou's eyes shifted past Matt. "Are you sure? Have you never heard of the judge?"
"Yes, I'm sure, Mr. Pierce. Now I really must go."
"I'm sorry. Actually, I have one more question."
"Yes?"
"Would you have coffee with me?"
"Coffee? Now?"
"Yes, if you have the time."
"Ha, you know I'm old enough to be your mother."
"I doubt it. You're no older than I am."
"I only look young."
"Coffee?"
Stories from a Hard Place is a narrative podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, R.A. Jacobson presents another chapter from Hard Place, read by the author. Opening music by Noah Zacharin. Production copyright by R.A. Jacobson, 2022. If you'd like to support Stories from a Hard Place, please go to patreon.com/hardplace. If you would like a book version, either ebook or print, you can find it anywhere books are sold, including your local library. You can find links to all these and much more at Dead Cat Studio. That's deadcatstud.io.
Thanks for listening. Keep the shiny side up.